Vanity Project. C'est la vie. Vanity Project. Quiet please, it's a Vanity Project with James and Bridie.
Your best play on Vanity Project, the best podcast of all time. Have I overhyped it? I think not. My name is Brady. I'm a writer and an actor and other stuff. And this guy, whose dulcet tones you're about to hear, is also a wonderful comedian and writer by the name of James Colley.
Hi, Brady.
That was dulcet.
Yeah, I was just wondering, like, I was trying to remember the definition of dulcet. It's only tones that are dulcet. There are so few things ever described as dulcet.
Dulcet, from dulce, meaning sweet.
Is that true?
I convinced myself.
Well, we're learning like already.
I'm teaching myself things. How are you, James?
I am well. I'm excited about this album, actually. We are doing the two sides to Leonard Nimoy, and I will reveal there is one side to Leonard Nimoy I like.
Until you said it out loud, I was like, oh, two sides of him as a person, and not just the fact that it's an old album and there's a side A and a side B.
I hadn't actually put that to you. That's really...
We really are learning already. Yeah. Gosh, we're 30 seconds in and it's all happening. That's right. We are listening to the two sides of Leonard Nimoy.
Are you a Trekkie?
I know who Leonard Nimoy is because of Star Trek.
Yes.
I know that he's Spock.
Yes.
I know nothing else about Star Trek. Everybody's like, oh, check out stars. And they go to stars and stuff.
Everybody's like, oh, check out stars. Do you know what series from the early 60s you should get into?
And they like travel around and go to space places, which sounds great, but I've just never got into it. How accurate was that?
Yeah, well, they definitely go to space places.
So I know who he is because you can't not know what Star Trek is, but I don't have a very in-depth knowledge.
That surprised me. You're not a sci-fi person at all, are you?
No, I like sci-fi, but I have just never... I mean, what's a sci-fi that I sort of grew up watching? Like Red Dwarf, things like that. Like weirder comedy sci-fi, I guess.
I understand. Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Why, are you a Trekkie?
No, my father was a Trekkie, and his father before him. No, like, I have absorbed Star Trek by osmosis. So
yeah.
I am across it now. I actually quite like it. It's one of those things that every second movie is quite good.
Yeah, I've seen some of the movies. I just haven't seen any of the original Star Trek. I've seen snippets here and there, and like my uncle's like kind of grew up on it and loved it and so have showed me snippets here and there. So I have like a working knowledge.
It is surprising that like it's one of the smartest shows to have existed, because a lot of it is just, as much as it seems like biz lasers and stuff, it is like philosophical quandary. In fact, like I was told by our friends who are very big Star Trek fans, they're like, okay, start on The Next Generation, which seems to be like, It's the accessible but still good enter the Star Trek world thing. That's with Patrick Stewart. His one. And so I tuned in for this expecting, like, I grew up on Star Wars, like, expecting a kind of Star Wars-y thing. And the first episode, it's a cosmic jester in a Shakespearean garb shows up to debate debate the worth of the human race, and you must answer his rhymes and speak to him in riddles about whether human beings have worth. I'm like, they spend a lot of the show being like, here's our giant superpowered spaceship. Now, a mystical puck wants you to debate him.
That sounds like my dream show.
That's why I'm surprised you're not a Trekkie.
Maybe I'm just not a Trekkie yet. It's kind of been one of those shows that I've assumed I'll get around to at some point, but I haven't yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I will be a fan as soon as I get into it. I've seen a couple of the movies, but like I said, not any of the OG Star Trek.
So what's your association with Leonard Nimoy?
Okay, well, I mentioned my uncles before. This is one of the albums that we've covered on this podcast. One of the few albums, sorry, that we've covered on this podcast that I actually already know. Because
what?
Yeah. And I know this album really well. I listened to it as a kid. I know a lot of lyrics off by heart to this album, which I'm quite...
So you know Leonard Leonard Nimoy primarily is a musician.
I do. Isn't that weird? I think because my uncles, who were really familiar with his work, knew this album, and there's so many fun songs which are appropriate for kids on this album, it was something they always played around my brother and I when we were little. So I didn't realize when I started listening to this that it was that album. But as soon as the first track played, I was like, oh, I know every single word to this. Yeah, so
this is like for your version of Bon Jovi's Slippery While Wet to me.
I think so. Yeah, it's interesting though, because looking him up, doing a little bit of research, obviously Spock is his most famous role, but he had done a lot.
Yep, before. He rides the monorail in The Simpsons.
I swear, it's you two or The Simpsons you bring up every episode. Yeah. We need to issue our listeners with like bingo charts.
Does he have any YouTube connections? I'll do a quick Google. You go through his lesser known stuff and I'll see what he did with YouTube.
Well, I was very excited to see that he's in an episode of The Twilight Zone, which is one of the most amazing TV shows of all time. He's in A Quality of Mercy, which is a great episode. It's actually interesting, though. I found this quote from him in an interview where he said, "I'm a second child who was educated to the idea that my older brother was to be given respect and not perturbed. I was not to upstage him. So my acting career was likewise designed to be a supporting player, a character actor, i.e. not the leading man," which I found really interesting. And when you look at his CV, like, he has a lot of character roles. He has quite long periods where he doesn't work. And then along comes Spock. Along comes Spock.
One of the great romantic comedies.
Yeah. What have you found?
What I have found is that in an edition of Premiere magazine from November 1988. Okay, so here are our stories from least interesting to us to most interesting to us. Firstly, imagine Yoko Ono and the shaping of John Lennon's image. Okay. Clint Eastwood's tribute to bebop king Charlie Parker. Okay, we're getting close to a Vanity Project area. John Lithgow's set diary. Leonard Nimoy's new enterprise, and U2 revives the concert film with Rattle and Hum.
Bingo!
So everyone wanted to know they were together on 1998's November issue of Premiere magazine, a magazine I've definitely heard of before.
Right, before we get into the album and some more musical themed chat, I want to give you some what I think are quite fun facts. About Leonard Nimoy, a.k.a. Spock.
Spock facts.
Spock facts.
Were you ever called Spock as a kid?
Was I called Spock?
Yeah.
No.
Is Spock not a New Zealand derogatory term as well?
What?
If you're a nerd, you're a Spock.
Oh, well, no. I mean, I was never called a nerd.
Oh, sorry. The Spock and the Jock was the original title for this podcast.
Spock and the Jock. Oh, man.
It sounds like a Triple M breakfast show. It does.
G'day, welcome back to Spock and the Jock. Okay, well, here's Spock fact number one. He's got two autobiographies. The first is called I Am Not Spock. The second, released 20 years later, is called I Am Spock.
There are two sides to Leonard Nimoy.
And I think very fittingly for someone who's so famous and beloved for a science fiction role, an asteroid was named 4864 Nimoy in his honour shortly after he died in 2015, which is a really lovely thing. That was Spock facts, Spock and the Jock. Thank you so much.
And we'll give our first call is two tickets to Leonard Nimoy this summer.
Great. That was my Spock facts. Do you have any musical associations with him?
No. I was surprised. Coming into this album, I presumed, so I have more of an association with William Shatner in the musical world. And even then, it's spoken word albums.
Yeah.
I was surprised at how musical this album is. I expect it to be a Spock monotone. In fact, I wouldn't have been shocked if this was a John Wade-esque philosophy treatise.
Yeah. Well, there's actually some comparisons I'm going to draw to the John Wayne album as we get into it. But let's talk about it. This was released in 1968. Great year. By Dot Records. This is not his debut album. He released an album the year before, called Mr. Spock's Music from Outer Space. So absolutely leaning into the character.
Like the 60s ruled.
I know, we missed out, man. So this is thrilling because there are two sides to the album and two sides to Leonard Nimoy.
This is also like, I think like the context you have to put this in as well is this is a smash hit and the most like out there and progressive show on television at the time. Like
he's a star.
It wasn't just huge, but it was also radical.
Yeah.
I don't think, like, what's the equivalent of that now? There doesn't seem, like, even being radically progressive is, if anything, quite boring to see come out of Netflix and stuff because it's just what happens. Like, it's a good place to be, but it's also, like, the majority of television now, aside from the stand-up specials, where they really dial it the other way.
No, I think you're right. It was very, revolutionary show. It made a lot of impact, and he's a huge star. He's at the height of his, fame when he's releasing the second album. It is called The Two Sides. Side one of the album, the literal side A, is in character as Spock, and the B side is him as himself, Leonard Nimoy. So that's really interesting to know going in. We're going to kind of get a character study, and then we're going to look at Leonard Nimoy and his kind of musical tastes.
Before we get in, what do you think Spock's character is as someone unfamiliar with Star Trek?
I've seen images of him in this character, and it feels like he...
Tell me. Okay, I've never heard of Spock before. Introduce me to Spock.
Hello, this is Mr. Spock, and he keeps everything running on the ship, and he knows all the stuff because he knows things. He's real smart and is a robot.
And can you tell me his personality a little bit?
Is always being right a personality? I get that vibe. Like, he knows what's what.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Heart of gold, softy, real softy, with a hard exterior.
Nope.
Soft exterior, heart of ice.
And what? So, okay. let's backtrack here. Let's make sure I've got everything. He's an alien robot.
Yeah.
And with a heart of gold.
And great dress sense. He's well put together.
And great. They all wear a uniform.
Yeah.
He wears his better.
Well put together. You don't have to think about it. It takes a lot of the stress out of everyday choices.
Okay.
Accurate.
Well, no. But let's see. We'll get to the end of this side, and then I'm going to ask you what your opinions are on Spock's character.
Okay, let's play the first song, which I know all the words to. This is the first song from Leonard Nimoy's Two Sides of Leonard Nimoy. This is Highly Illogical.
Girl meets boy. They fall in love. She says he's everything she's dreamed of. But when they get married, before he's aware, she changes his habits, the way he combs his hair. She changes him to someone he's never been, and then complains he's not like other men. Now really, I find this most illogical.
Highly illogical. What an opening track.
That drop. Skrillex could never produce this track.
Skrillex could never.
I was listening to this. Like, this rarely happens, but it was a genuine, like, I caught myself banging my heel along with the kick drum. Like, this is a fantastic track.
You cannot not move when you hear this song. And also, just like, there is no doubt about what decade we're in. The horns, the yeah. whole arrangement. This is the most 1960s thing. I'm like, yes, take us there. I love it. The shuffle of the beat and the horns, it is the most 1960s thing. I'm obsessed.
It could be like in a different world, this is Austin Powers theme song.
There's a lot of this album which I'm like, this could totally be on an Austin Powers soundtrack.
It's so much fun. I love it. And again, like, I was expecting the most boring spoken word out. Like, I had set my sights low for what this would be. And I'm like, oh, wait, this is great. This is great. I love it. We're in.
I just had this moment when I was listening to the song, and it just, you know, when you have a memory that you haven't accessed in a really long time, and it's like you have to sift through all the muck that's on top of it, and it just from the recesses of my brain sprang forth, and I just blurted out the the push button windows, push button doors. And I was like, oh, I'm singing. And it like took over me and I was singing the song. And I was like, I know who it is. I also can't help but when you read the lyrics, think of it as if it was done today by like a really jaded stand-up comic. Double-barreled carburetors rush you any place. You can even find a parking space. That's highly logical. Just kind of has that cadence when you see it in paper.
Well, that's interesting because, so to give you a little bit of the Vulcan, which is what he is, the Vulcan backstory, the
which
ethos.
Which is an alien
species. That are not robots, but are aliens.
Okay, half right.
They are the aliens who made first contact with humans. Mm-hmm. I realize I know a lot more about this than I thought I did. But they're an alien race. He is half human, half Vulcan.
Mm-hmm.
So they can interbreed with humans, which shows how genetically similar they are. But what they... The way they work is they are creatures of pure logic and rationality. So they're kind of robotic in that way. Exactly. Well, he's not always right because the battle is between William Shatner's Kirk, who is gung-ho and fights with his heart, and logical Spock. So, like, the classic moment is Spock is trying to give him advice on what to do based on how you would do a chess move. And Shatner is talking about, well, it's actually how you do a poker move. You should bluff. And God, you look so bored right now, Brady. But I was expecting this to be like a monotoned like recitation of the golden ratio or some shit. This is fantastic fun.
It's so good. A bit of a... bit of a detour in terms of the sound to track two. This is... The Difference Between Us, which maybe is addressed at Kirk now that you've said this. I don't know. This is the second song.
If you could live for just a moment in my world and recognize what makes me what I am, perhaps that would the catalyst be to harmonize the differences between you and me.
That was The Difference Between Us. Track two on Two Sides of Leonard Nimoy and what I think John Wayne was trying to do with his album.
Actually, is a good point. This is like some actual like soft philosophy going on. It is like a handbrake turn from highly illogical, which, like you say, it moves like if Spock is doing observational gear. Like this is if every episode of Star Trek started with a Seinfeldian like stand-up bit, which it absolutely should. If you are in control of the Strange New World series or whatever the hell the current one is,
yep.
This is how you should be opening it each week, a new character doing a stand-up set.
I think because the first track is such a banger, I probably didn't take in the lyrics of the second track as much because I was still in that like really boppy up tempo place, and I was kind of, it is, as you say, such a handbrake turn that I wasn't, it kind of was so jarring that I didn't really take it in.
Yeah, I felt the same. Like this one, I had to go back a couple of times over, and also like, I guess like it's highly illogical is out of character. This is back in character, but I think the album's worse for it.
Now, something which is delightful, and again, I think probably a relic of the last century, but something that I wish we just brought back more. This album has liner notes, and so it's really great because as we go through it, we can see what Leonard Nimoy wanted us to know about each track. So the liner notes for this song, The Difference Between Us, are... Could Spock ever feel hidden deep emotional love problems? Could he react as a human in a romantic situation? And now I can't help but like, please discuss in 1,000 words or less. In this essay, I will.
This is something I thought about a lot while listening through this album, which is like, when, like, this is maybe the line between where I have a writer's brain and not an actor's brain.
Mm-hmm.
Because whenever actor is like, but where will my character grow after this? So I think what they're up to now is they're off doing this and they're living in Paris and they're writing their first novel, whatever. As a writer, I'm like, nope, the second the final episode ended, a meteorite hit their house and everything blew up. I'm like,
James.
No, I decide what the life of your character is and you have no control over it. And this is how I feel about it. If I was a writer of Star Trek and he went through this, I'd be like, nope, I will decide. I will tell you what happens to Spock. You do not go and philosophize about it.
Ah, oh, well, then you're not going to like the liner notes for the next song, which is Once I Smiled. The liner notes for this read, Once Spock's emotional barriers were broken down, and for a short while he tasted a bittersweet romantic experience. So we're getting a bit of backstory here. This is Once.
Once I smiled a smile so rare, loved a girl with golden hair, acted like a human boy.
Aw, poor old Spock.
I even thought, like, coming into this, that Morrissey wished he had thought up this song, and it's got a lot of Morrissey to it, from the title to a lot of the strange imagery to the not really quite being human but pretending you are. Like, there's a lot of Morrissey to it.
And it definitely feels like we've definitely come back to the 60s in this arrangement. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, after that weird detour in track two. So I quite enjoyed that. But I also was like, I can see this being performed in, like, in that Las Vegas lounge, or, you know,
interesting.
Like,
interesting. To me, this was gondola music.
Which is elevator music for the bourgeois.
Yeah, exactly.
I was about to say, I just nearly said alligator music, not elevator music. Alligator music's different entirely.
I don't like this song. And this was the Same. Point at the album where I was like, I like Leonard Nimoy so much. I want this to be good. And I think what my difference is I like Leonard Nimoy. I do not like Spock.
So you like side B and not side A of this album.
I like the side B side of Leonard Nimoy. Spoilers.
Well then, shall we rush through the remaining songs on side one? Let's maybe have the final song of side one, which is Amphibious Assault. And then we will jump to Leonard Nimoy. Here we go. You can't not play a song called Amphibious Assault.
Now, the craft touches the beach, pushing a wave before it. The merriment subsides for a moment, and all in the glass room look casually toward the ramp gate.
If you weren't scared of amphibians before, you are now. That was Amphibious Assault. You're listening to Spock and Chuck.
It's Amphibious Assault, a beautiful depiction of the D-Day landings.
Lest we forget, boys.
Happy Anzac Day, fellas. Get on the two up.
From five till the going down of the sun, you're with Spock and Chuck.
At the going down the sun and in the morning, it's Spock and Jock on your radio.
Oh, we're going to hell.
We're ending Vanity Project and we're starting Spock and Jock. And from now on, it'll be Spock and Jock. And we'll never clarify which of us is which.
It's really clear that I'm the Jock, mate. It's really clear. Right.
A lot of this album, like, this one's a bit of a weirder track, but a lot of the Leonard Nimoy album is like someone's trying to tell philosophy to you in a Thai massage parlor. All the music is like, there's chimes and whimsy, and then it's like, make sure you eat 3 servings of vegetables a day.
I think that's right. And you know what? I think the music is, as you say, like quite, I think that's a really good comparison to draw, because it is quite relaxing music, but the lyrics are pretty intense. They're talking about this very surreal, futuristic war with amphibians, but it's quite relaxing to listen to. This just made me want to go and listen to War of the Worlds, which is like a hell of a great time, and that's some drama right there.
I just need to clarify one thing.
Tell me.
What do you think an amphibious assault is?
Oh, no, I know. Like, it's not frogs.
Okay. Just checking. Just clarifying. We can now move on to the second side.
You think I'm listening to this being like the tadpoles are coming.
A little bit, yeah. No. I thought you thought this might have been a Godzilla situation.
Us on land and in water. That's what it means, right?
Yes, that's right.
Oh, for a second I was like, no, is it a giant frog? I thought it was about the craft, like the spacecraft that's on land and in water. I mean, I would listen to a song that was about a giant frog attacking us.
Well, Godzilla is kind of two kinds of amphibious assault.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. That's deep.
That's so deep.
Spock and the Jock. Let's go into side B. This is Bilbo.
No, wait. No, wait. We've had Spock, and now Leonard Nimoy is like, now I want them to know the real me. And so he decides that his introduction to the real him is what, James?
Bilbo Baggins.
This is an absolute banger. Get ready.
In the middle of the earth, in the land of Shire, lives a brave little hobbit whom we all admire. With his long wooden pipe, fuzzy woolly toes, he lives in a hobbit hole.
And everybody knows him, Bilbo, Bilbo, Bilbo Baggins, sweetest little hobbit of them all. Oh my god, I love that song. Yeah, love that song. I know every word to that song.
Bridie actually sang along with that song and danced along with it. Like, she's not underselling how much she loved it.
Bilbo Baggins. It is so funny to me that he's like, time for them to get to know the real me. Let me tell you about how much I love the Hobbit.
Well, that, okay, so pound for pound, this is one of the most insane things ever put on any recording ever. First, okay, so this is before, like, so this is, Lord of the Rings is just novelized. Like, it's just the novels, like the Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. I'm not a fantasy man, but obviously this is like a long before there were any series or anything of it. So this is a song about a book from like 50 years before.
Wait, when was The Hobbit published? Yeah. Wow. Gosh. Okay, it's from 30 years before.
Okay, yeah. Still, it's like, so
it's a time. It's a time.
It's like a book from a long time ago. He is already in character as Spock. Then he's going to... And this goes through a lot of just the plot of The Hobbit. Like, if there is one series I care about less than Star Trek, it is the Lord of the Rings
universe. Maybe you would have cared about it more if Peter Jackson got it done in a more efficient, boppy manner. Maybe you should have taken a leaf out of Leonard Nimoy's book. This is a banger.
You really love... Like, I'm worried. This is the one time in the history of the show that I'm like, I can't go too hard on this because you clearly love it so much. Just, our friendship is on the line.
No, because it's like... I just have memories of like driving around Dunedin with my uncle Seamus when I was a little kid, just listening to this. I knew the song before I read The Hobbit, you know, really changed how I read The Hobbit. More country pop fantasy Tolkien crossovers, please. Really enjoyed it. Won't hear another word against it. So now that we know how much he loves Bilbo Baggins.
Yeah, the first sight of Leonard Nimoy.
Let's hear track two, side two. This is Cotton Candy, which is, fun fact from the liner notes, written by one of the camera crew of the Star Trek series.
Can you say the whole damn title? Show it the respect it deserves.
Cotton Candy, brackets, on a summer day.
On a summer day, green grass on a hillside. Could they turn my love around? Could they bring her back to my side?
We now enter the portion of the album that is 100% my shit. This is entirely the kind of thing that I just listened to. This song has the kind of vibe that I would describe as a song that would appear on a compilation called Now That's What I Call 1963 that they sold at like 2 a.m. on Channel 10. Do you remember when they used to in the middle of the night sell a compilation album and they'd play like two lines of Janis Joplin would sing Bobby McGee and then it would go on to the next thing. She'd sing it just like
uncanny.
That. This is from here on out. I love this album.
It is so good. This to me, the image that it conjured up for me is like it weirdly feels like a bit of like a spaghetti western, like with kind of Spanish influenced guitar. I was just like, why are we suddenly on horseback listening to this song?
This is the man who killed Bilbo Baggins.
Oh no. I loved it. Hey, could you do me a favor?
Mm-hmm.
We're up to track three of side two, which is called Gentle on My Mind. Could you please, as we go into this, read the liner notes for this song?
Mm-hmm.
I've highlighted it here for you.
Gentle on My Mind. The kind of song that Nimoy personally loves to sing.
Good, it's on your album.
That keeps you in the back roads by the rivers of my memory and keeps you ever gentle on my mind.
He loves to sing this type of song.
It's the kind of song that personally he loves to sing.
And personally, I love to hear it.
Every other song causes him physical pain. This is the song that he personally loves to sing. I love this song.
It's good. gorgeous.
We are, like, this is, my first note on this is 100% completely indistinguishable from shit I just listened to. If this appeared on a playlist after How I Got to Memphis, I would not notice it was from Vanity Project.
100%. This is just a really beautiful late 60s gentle pop song.
My favorite kind of genre, which is a cowboy looks back and wonders if maybe he screwed everything up for good.
That is one of my favorite genres too. Classic genre. I absolutely love that.
This was the point in the album where when I got to the next song, I was like, okay, now you're just fucking with me.
Mm-hmm, because
the next song is called Miranda.
And you are...
James Colley.
Married to someone called Miranda.
I'm not defined by my wife.
You are. If she was my wife, I would base my entire identity around her. She's a legend. Miranda. So another little folk pop moment.
She's not that little.
Bilbo. Let's hear Miranda.
There was no one in the world that I longed to see. Miranda, my pretty little bride-to-be, when my ship sailed in.
So at this point, I'm crying.
I'm crying. It's a beautiful song.
Do you know, honestly, my thought coming off this? Oh, I should have known about this before our wedding.
100%. Pretty little bride-to-be. Because there's a lot of... look.
Oh, where's this going?
Have you really listened to all the lyrics?
No.
Okay. Because it's not all good news in this song about Miranda, my friend.
A-cha-cha.
A-cha-cha. Starts well. Starts as a great wedding song.
Yeah.
There was nothing in this world that I wanted more than to see my Miranda waiting on the shore. You, always in the water. Just about to make an amphibious landing. There was no one in the world that I longed to see more than Miranda, my pretty little bride-to-be. Okay, great.
Done, great.
Beautiful wedding shorts.
All right, good song on the playlist.
As I landed safe in the harbour where the sun lay warm on the ground.
Wonderful.
Though a whistle blew and blew again, my Miranda was nowhere to be found. Oh, dear.
Well, maybe she's off just blowing a whistle.
So I sailed away to the seven seas for many long years.
Look around first. I'll sail around for a few more years.
Near the tamarind trees. That's nice, at least.
Yeah.
And then... he comes back.
Mm-hmm.
He sailed once again for the sunset to Miranda's side of the sea. Why are you dating a girl who lives at the other side of the sea? Anyway, for the very first time, the whistle blew and Miranda came running to me. Great news. Then the song goes on to talk about how they lived together happily forevermore, except he never asked her about who or where she was with that day when my ship sailed.
I feel that's at least half on you, though.
Yeah, you could have looked around.
Did you say 3 p.m. or 4 p.m.? Ah, fuck, he's going back out to sea.
Miranda, where were you on the 14th of July, 1968? Can you explain your whereabouts?
When one D.B. Cooper took...
All right, we're only a couple of songs away from the end of this album.
Yeah, usually about this point we would jump through things, but I love both of the songs coming up, so I'm going to make you all listen to them.
All right, this is If I Were a Carpenter.
If I were a carpenter and you were a lady, would you marry me anyway? Would you have my baby?
If I Were a Carpenter from side two of Two Sides of Leonard Nimoy, what'd you think?
I love the song. Again, straight in my hitting zone. Really love this. I can't believe how much I didn't like the other half of this album. I think maybe he did a sabotage effort on Spock here.
Side two is winning.
Yeah, side one is like, well, here's a bunch of songs that Spock would like, and they mostly suck because that guy's a loser. But my friend Leonard on the other side, boy, is he great. This also made me think of one of my favorite lines in music history, which is the Elton John Your Song bit where he goes, if I were a sculptor,
No.
Yeah. You know what? Dumb thought. I'm not going to be a sculptor. Never mind.
All right. I love it too. There's nothing much more to say about it other than it's beautiful and gentle and a really nice time. There's one more song on the album. This is Love of the Common People. And according to the liner notes, it's a song that Nimoy enjoys singing on personal appearances since it reflects his own philosophy.
Okay, so just to clarify, Gentle on My Mind is a song that he personally loves to sing. But this is a song that he enjoys singing on personal appearances. And don't get it twisted.
Here it is, the last track of the album.
She'll get by because she's living in the love of the common people. Smiles in the heart of the family man. Her daddy's gonna buy her a dream to cling to, and her mama's gonna love her just as much as she can. She can.
Oh, gosh, he does enjoy singing that on personal appearances.
Well, it reflects his own philosophy.
That's what I thought.
I love this song. I've always loved this song. Springsteen does a great version of this song. This song goes around
Who?
Everywhere. Bruce Springsteen?
Don't know him.
Oh, he's Bruce Campbell's brother. They share a first name for some reason. I love this. The only thing that always comes out when I listen to this, firstly, superior common people. Pulp can eat shit. This is the superior song about common people.
Disagree.
You're wrong. But also, the thing that the pop song does have over this, that this one kind of misses, is no one who uses the term common people actually resonates with common people. And the pop song gets that. Mm. This song does not get that.
Yeah, I think that's very, very true. So that's the whole album. As we have discussed, we probably like the authentic Tolkien nerd Nimoy side more than the Spock side, but there's some bangers on the Spock side too, so you should give this one a listen.
If you had asked me, I was certain that the first side ended with Bilbo. I am still reeling that he starts in the second
side. Wait, no, wait. Do you think Spock is a Tolkien fan? Does he know about Bilbo?
I know, he's a loser.
Oh my God. I will not stand for that. That is just bullying. Caught on air.
Spock in the joke.
So this album reached 97 on the Billboard charts.
That's surprisingly low to me, weirdly.
I mean, top 100 is great, but I also was surprised by that because it actually has been quite popular since its release. Like, it's an album that a lot of people are familiar with.
Yeah, so it feels like even when I hadn't listened to it, I knew of this album
exactly.
For a long time.
So it maybe, it didn't reach number one, but it certainly hung around where a lot of albums have their brief moment and then they disappear away. This one has kind of stayed in the cultural consciousness, which is cool.
As long as this album's listened to, the 60s are still alive.
Oh, and that's what I worry about every day. Who's going to keep the 60s alive? Well, now we have to ask our two important questions. Number one, was this album a mistake?
Half of this album's a mistake. Half of this album's an incredible triumph and half of this album's a terrible mistake.
So I'm that balances out to neutral.
Which is very Spockish.
I reckon half of side A is a terrible mistake and a wonderful triumph. And half of side B is a brilliant triumph and then terribly boring. So that also balances out to neutral. So we're going to go with a meh.
Yeah.
As our verdict. And now, I now need to write down what songs I'm going to add to the playlist. Part of me just wants to put Bilbo Baggins in every entry.
Put fucking Bilbo Baggins.
I want to take every song out of our playlist that's already there and replace it with wall-to-wall Bilbo Baggins. That's obviously going in, but you can choose one too because I'm very kind like that.
Let me put Love of the Common People in at least. Then you can have the Ballad of Bilbo Baggins.
Oh, you know what? Surely let's do Highly Illogical.
Highly Illogical has to be on there. Great. Okay. Well, this was great. Okay, you get three tracks in there, Leonard. We love you. Well done.
We love you. We miss you. We look up to the night sky and see that asteroid. That's beautiful.
Oh, if we could see the asteroid, we might be in trouble.
Oh, no. Well, this has been a ride this episode. James, only remains to do your favorite bit.
Well, something that Spock himself would love to do were he here with us is rate and review a podcast. I tried.
Don't try. Don't give me that. Don't look me in the eyes and tell me that you're trying.
do the thing that you...
Yeah, good on you. See you next time. Spock the Jock.